Hey, everybody, welcome to the Daniel Davis Deep Dive Intel Brief, where we give you the best of what we learned this week and the most update to what happened overnight. And man, do we have a lot to discuss right now. President Trump last night made some comments in Miami that were supposed to, I think, calm a jittery public and say, hey, the war is going fine. Don't worry about it. But some of the things he said actually added to some of my worry, as we'll see here, because now he was describing that we are free at last.
Tonight, we're closer than ever to the rise of the Middle East that is finally free at last from Iranian terror, aggression, and nuclear blackmail. That's what's happened. It was nuclear blackmail for years and years. And beyond that, there was blackmail, period. Under my leadership, America is ending the threat posed by this radical regime, decimating Iran's capabilities with Operation Epic Fury, something that nobody's ever seen anything quite like it. We have the most powerful military in the world by far.
Man, I really wish you would stop saying that last part, especially more on that in just a second. But let's take a look at what he said, first of all, that we are closer than ever to having a free Middle East. And man, I mean, in what universe can you even come close to making that claim? There have been the whole region is embroiled in a war right now. This is definitely not just the U.S.-Iran. This is a regional conflict that is burning up the whole thing. And in fact, it expanded overnight by the addition of the Houthis. I did a show earlier today where I talked a lot about the Houthis, Hezbollah, and the Khatib Hezbollah in Iraq. The Lebanese Hezbollah and the Khatib Hezbollah in Iraq have all joined this. Recommend you go in and watch that video to see the latest tactical developments here. But the bottom line is this place is expanding. Missiles are flying all over the Middle East. Assets are getting hit in Iran, in Israel, in the UAE, in Saudi Arabia. American forces have been hit. American aircraft on a tarmac have been destroyed. This thing is just going out of control. And of course, the Strait of the Hormuz stays closed and firmly in control of the Iranian side. Ergo, we are not close to ending anything. So the only thing that matters is, have you brought the Iranian side to heel? Have you forced their government into negotiations? And they're exactly the opposite. And they're more bold and more audacious than ever before, more defiant than they have been at any point. And of course, can you force them militarily to open that strait? And the answer is definitely no. And we're going to see why that's even additionally in a problem. But, you know, he goes again to this justification to try and say that we're, you know, nearly free at last, when the whole region and everybody sees with their own eyes that it has never been more fraught. Not in my lifetime. The region has, I mean, I guess you'd really have to go back to the 1973 Israeli and Arab War. I think that's the last time that it was, you know, in a flame like this. Not since that time. That has really been that. This is that serious. And we are almost certainly at the beginning of something whose duration that nobody can predict. I can't predict it. And there's no evidence that any side is doing anything but digging in its heels. So we can expect this to go a lot longer. But the justification he gives that Iran was doing nuclear blackmail and only my leadership into that. What nuclear blackmail? And again, this is something that's self-evident. Everyone, nearly everyone listening to this, other than those just diehard Trump supporters, understand there was no nuclear program. You allegedly obliterated it last year in Senate testimony just a few days ago. This past week, Tulsi Gabbard admitted that there had been, the facilities had been obliterated in 2025. It had not been rebuilt. Ergo, there's not even the possibility up to that point that they had a nuclear program, much less one that's imminent, meaning that none of the words that he said there were accurate at all. There has been no nuclear blackmail. To the contrary, they have been bending over backwards and doing backwards somersaults to try to find a diplomatic way to prove to everyone that they have no nuclear weapons. They have no plans to have a nuclear program. And they were happy to demonstrate that to the extent that on the 26th of February, they put on the table a zero enrichment with significant external observers to be able to validate that so that everyone could see they had no nuclear weapons. That cannot be twisted in any way, shape, or form into nuclear blackmail. And then the last thing he said there at that last pips is that we are the most powerful military in the history. if we're that powerful, then we don't need any allies. And of course, we also should be able to wrap this up quickly. And the fact that now on day 29, and now we're just, tomorrow will be the one full month mark. Nothing's even close to being wrapped up. The missiles keep flying from Iran. Defiant statements keep coming from Iran. Their regional allies are expanding. The attacks are going in all over the place. We're running out of interceptor missiles. We're running out of THAAD, high altitude missiles. We're running out of offensive missiles, cruise missiles. And we have hit like 10,000 targets as of 5 days. I don't know what the number is now, 10, 11, 12,000. Who knows what it is today? We keep blowing stuff up on the surface, but that doesn't get into any of those mountain, these military missile cities that we keep showing you. So as powerful as we are showing the limits of that power. And that's not giving anybody confidence in either our military capacity or in our leadership. But he went on to say something else. Speaking of, our allies, he claims on the one hand, we're the most powerful military ever. But then on the other hand, he's kind of annoyed that our allies in NATO haven't joined in the game.
I think that NATO made a terrible mistake when they wouldn't send a small amount of military armament, when they wouldn't send just even acknowledge what we were doing for the world and taking on Iran. I never considered it very risky, but war is always risk. You know, a lot of strange things happen in war that are very bad, but I didn't consider it. I know how great we're the greatest military by far anywhere. There was nobody close. I didn't think there was a big risk, but there's always surprises with war. They could be very bad surprises. I mean, wars are lost. It should be won. Many wars are lost. You think a country is going to wipe somebody out and they end up getting wiped out themselves. So it's always risky. But I think a tremendous mistake was when NATO just wasn't there.
You know, it's really odd there that he, again, reiterates the strongest military power, et cetera, and that I didn't think the risk was that big. And then he actually acknowledges that, but sometimes in war, you can have surprises. And then he even further acknowledges sometimes a power that seems like it's should dominate the other side ends up losing. So somewhere in his cognitive analysis center, there is the realization that wars can go bad and that sometimes even great military powers can end up losing. And obviously we've seen that in our own recent experience with Vietnam, with the Afghanistan war, and to an extent, even the Iraq war. And it just persists on to this day that the bigger military power didn't win. And even though I argue that the Russia-Ukraine war is effectively already won by the Russian side because they have the wherewithal and the means to continue to go forth, even if it takes a number of years further, they can literally just wear out the other side and the other side can't do anything about it. But even that one, this substantially greater military power on the surface, after 4+ years now, has not been able to military conquer, at least up to this point, the Iranian side, because the smaller power can show with sheer tenacity and force of will that it can fight on even when the spreadsheet says that it shouldn't. And so now here we are. And of course, I have been arguing since before that this spreadsheet showed that this nothing has happened so far has been a surprise to me at all, nor many of the experts that we have on our channel. So it troubles me that it is a surprise to him that he actually thought that there was no risk that our great military power would win, because everything that we've seen so far is exactly what we called before all this. And it doesn't take any special ability on our part. I mean, this stuff was out there. They were making the statements. It had been demonstrated in recent times. So it just wasn't hard. You just have to acknowledge reality. And that's what the administration seems either unable or unwilling to do. And now then we, of course, are on the cusp of potentially expanding this war on the ground and making a bad situation profoundly worse. God help us if we go down that path. So far, nothing happened overnight. There is still somewhere around 10,000 total ground forces on the ground right now in the region. Some of those were allegedly hit yesterday, but you've got Marines, you've got airborne troops, you've got Army Special Forces, somewhere around 10,000 altogether. We've got another alert for an additional 10,000, which could be there within 3 to 4 weeks, et cetera. So hopefully we're not going to do something really stupid, but that's where we are right now. In fact, speaking of 3 to 4 weeks, there was a statement made by the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, who also said, you know what? I think that even though the other side is weaker, but we are definitely stronger. But here's the thing. We're going to have this wrapped up in, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks.
Iran was already weak. When we are done with them here in the next couple of weeks, they will be weaker than they've been in recent history, and they will not be able to hide behind those weapons to break out and get a nuclear weapon, which would be crazy. For these people to ever get nuclear weapons would be crazy. Look what they're willing to do with the weapons they have now. They hit embassies, they target hotels, they try to kill civilians, they splash out at all their neighbors. Imagine if these radical lunatics had a nuclear weapon to threaten the world with.
So do I understand correctly that Secretary Rubio is saying there that it is a radical, religious radical that would hit embassies? That's what he specified, in that that's what they have done. They have hit some embassies the Iranian side has. If that sounds familiar to you, you may be thinking in the back of your head, seems like somebody else hit an embassy. Oh, yeah. It was the Israeli side that destroyed an embassy, an Iranian embassy in Syria. I think it was in 2023. They said that there was a high-value target in there, and I don't care about convention or anything else. They destroyed the building. They didn't just hit it. They destroyed an entire building because they wanted to, and we were as solid as the grave on that. Didn't say a word about it, didn't condemn anybody, literally just whistled past the graveyard, didn't say a thing about it. And now we're citing that same category as being example of a radical religious fanatic. That's what he wants to say there. And look, you know, you can say all day long that, you know, they were weak before. That's the stupid thing to say, if I can just be blunt about it. Recall that in January, that's what the narrative was, that we were saying the Iranian side is so weak. They've never been weaker in all 47 years of their life, and this is the time to go in. The protesters are rising up. The economy is falling down. They're rickety. All it's going to take is a few missiles here, and if you get lucky and decapitate them from the first strike, this thing could be over quickly. That's what we said, and we went in there with the military. We went in there with the missiles. We did kill and assassinate their supreme leader from the first shot. And what happened? Well, what happened is exactly what they said would happen. He was replaced. The other people who weren't killed continued to go on. The military plan they had with the decentralized operations and their military, in the absence of orders, leapt into action just exactly like they said it would happen. It did. They got them replaced like they said they would, and they've continued to prosecute the war as they said they would. And now then, they have shown that they were not as weak as we thought, as we claimed. Actually, I don't know that anybody ever thought that. But now, here he's literally drawing out that same thing again and saying, yeah, now then they're even weaker than they were. And so now probably 3 more weeks is going to be all it's going to take, and we're going to knock these guys out. Now, do I have to remind the secretary again that Iran has shown that they have sucked down all kinds of suffering and privation in the 8-year war that they had with Iraq that we helped facilitate there to try to destroy them then? And it didn't work when they were significantly less powerful than they are today, when they had significantly less weapons and capabilities than they have today. And why do you think that they're going to suddenly fall apart now? And in a few weeks, I mean, I circle you back to our show that we did earlier today when I talk about the missile inventories. Friend, we don't have 3 or so more weeks to just continue on at the same rate of fire that we have so far with our PAC-3 interceptors, the Arrow 2 and 3 interceptors for Israel, our THAAD interceptors, the high-altitude ones. Our Tomahawk missile inventory is getting dangerously low already. We can't keep going like this. We can't. The price of oil is now over $100 a barrel, almost certainly going to go up, especially with the Houthis entering this weekend. I bet when the markets open up on Monday, that probably is going to jump again, maybe to around 120. I think it was at 111 or something like that at the close yesterday of Brent. And that could pop up around to 120 when it opens up on Monday, especially if anything else happens over this weekend. So that's one ticking clock. You've got some of this, the natural gas that's getting out, of course, is having fertilizer issues. And that's going to start having genuine global agricultural problems just with producing food to eat. You have the issue with the the highly counterintuitive situation with chip making in Taiwan, which of course is the world's biggest supplier of chips that everything in our high tech world runs on, especially in the modern world. They need the feedstocks of natural gas that they were getting a lot from Qatar and some of the other products like helium or whatever to physically make these things. They're in a crisis in about 2 or 3 weeks as well. So, yeah, we need to end this war in 2 or 3 weeks, but he didn't even lay out a possibility. He didn't say anything about how this could militarily come to an end in 2 or 3 weeks according to terms that he would like to have. Didn't even proffer any, didn't even offer any. What after 29 days that you have not brought anyone to heal and they're actually, now their allies are expanding, how do you think that in 3 more weeks that suddenly it's just going to be over when you can't force open the Strait of Hormuz? Nobody from NATO is coming to help. You see what I'm saying? This is detached from reality. And yet they're going forward with confidence. But listen, this is going to come to an end somewhere, like in the near term, not like 6 months from now, maybe 1 month from now, because a lot of these compounding problems are going to start to manifest in ways that can't quickly be solved. And you obviously have, even in domestic, the nearer term issue with the rising cost of oil means the rising cost of gasoline, the rising cost of diesel, ergo the rising cost of everything. And that's not going to make anybody in America happy, and they're going to make their displeasure known. And President Trump is going to continue to bleed support, and that's going to cause him problems on anything else he wants to do domestically. So there are pressures coming from everywhere. And these kinds of statements that he and the Secretary of State and the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, a few days ago, they made, those things aren't going to fly anymore, folks. They're just not going to, because you can be confident and optimistic all day long, but when pain starts to result and people with their own eyes can see that you're nothing of the sort that you're describing is happening, and they see that the justification is just off the charts wrong, there's people are going to start making their displeasure known. We also, speaking of the timing, we had Patrick Henningsen this week that talked about exactly that in a little bit more detail.
You talk about the military timeline and the fact that the U.S. cannot wage a war of endurance or a war of attrition against the Iranians. There's a lot of problems. One is they're out of area. That's the most obvious. Two, their regional capabilities and facilities have been severely degraded by the Iranians already in the first couple of weeks. So that really leaves naval assets as the sort of main support, as well as trucking things in from Europe. That's just a technical military timeline. There's another timeline that the United States have a massive problem with, which is the political timeline. They're running on an extremely short political timeline. The Trump administration plus the economic situation. But aside from the fact, Daniel, this is bankrupting the United States. And between Ukraine and now this farrago here, in Iran, it's going to bankrupt the U.S. They're just going to pay for it through deficit spending. That means inflation at home, but you have additional inflationary pressures with the closure of the Straits of Hormuz and the constriction of the oil supply. So there's an additional pressure on that political timeline for the U.S., for the Trump administration, for the Republican Party. Plus, there's that military timeline as well. How about Iran's timeline? How does that look? Is that as short as Trump's? To either pull results. Israel's timeline is extremely short. Viability of Netanyahu in this current situation, even despite all the censorship.
So you see there that there's just not a near-term solution to this. And there's going to be increasing pressure to do something different, which, of course, my near-term problem and concern is that we're going to try to force the matter on the ground. And it's going to be, if the campaign so far has not been tightly wound, this thing is just as loose as it gets. You just can't conduct a ground operation against another country in a full-on war that, by the way, still has not gone to the normal procedure, which is required by our Constitution, U.S. law, that you get authorization from Congress. So now no one can claim it's not a full-on war, even though President Trump weirdly, day before yesterday, or maybe it was yesterday, said, it's not really a war. it's just an excursion or some weird thing like that. It doesn't make what you say. That's what it is. And now then you're going to have to expand it even further. And that is, there's just no logical path that solving the problem with doing something on the ground is going to change anything that we talked about with the either making the regime fall, Or choking off their economics, or, of course, forcing an open in the Strait of Hormuz. And speaking of the Strait of Hormuz, we had Larry Johnson, who talked about the pros and cons and the difficulties of forcing that thing open.
The United States is going to try to force it open, and we'll lose ships in the process. And we're going to lose ships that we really can't afford to lose. We're nowhere near the strength that we had during World War II. I mean, we're just a fraction of that. None of the other countries in the Gulf, not the Saudis, Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, none of them have a navy. None of them have any capacity to control that strait. And so what Iran has discovered out of this is how unprepared the world was. And so now they're going to charge an entrance fee. You know, it's like the you got a cover charge. You want to come into the Persian Gulf? You know, fine, you know, $2 million. And what they're going to do, though, is they're going to break the back of the petrodollar, because all that oil that's going to come in and out of that, they're going to pay for it with Chinese yuan. And China's more than happy to just make the United States twist, turn, and suffer a little bit.
Yeah, that's a true statement. We've gotten over our skis and have caused all kinds of problems with the Russia-Ukraine war and supporting that with the Ukraine side, when all logic and ration said we should have diplomatically ended that in the first couple of months. The Biden administration deserves the blame for that. But then everything that Trump has done since he came in after promising to end it in a day, now it's not even on the radar anymore. He's just rolling forward. And, of course, he bragged the other day that he's about ready to add Cuba to the mix, and implied very strongly that he would use military power for that too. Obviously that's not going to help anything here. And, you know, who knows how that could work out. That could also turn into a new bleeding ulcer. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But the question is here at hand, is there a diplomatic solution to this? Because if there's no military solution, and there's not, And if I advocate, please don't try the ground operation, because that'll only get a lot more Americans killed. It will actually elevate the position and the strength of the Iranian side, give them even more confidence that they can stand up to the U.S. and worsen our negotiating position if you try to do it later. We had Jim Jatras, former American diplomat, on this week to talk about where we are with the possibilities or limitations of diplomacy as of this moment.
I don't see any circumstances where the Iranians would be reaching out, because remember, they have ruled out a ceasefire. They insist, sort of like the Russians do in Ukraine, that this has to be a comprehensive deal. But they face the same problem, that any deal they make with the United States is likely to be another deception, a bunch of commitments that will not be kept by the U.S. side. So I don't know that they would put much stock in that. The other thing, the first thing occurs to me when I hear this, Daniel, is when was the last time the Iranians thought they were making progress on a negotiation with the United States? It was on February 28th when we attacked them. Let's remember, you know, Trump announced at the beginning of the weekend that he was going to give them 48 hours to reopen the strait, or we're going to pound the stuffing out of them. And then he pulled back from that. Frankly, I don't think he had any intention of following through with that. Instead, he comes out with his five-day extension now, aside from any profit-taking that went on during that time. I think he's probably setting them up for some sort of another escalation, another attack, maybe something on the ground. We've been talking last few days about the assembly of this Marine Expeditionary Unit in the region and what their possible target might be. Frankly, my first thought when I heard this is another deception. This is another attempt to try to lull the Iranians. I don't think it's going to work, but lull the Iranians into a sense that, oh, we can talk now. We can negotiate about the fundamental question of this war, not just the ceasefire. Frankly, I don't think this is in good faith from the U.S. side. I think it's another setup.
And that's certainly the way the Iranians are viewing it. Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi overnight continues to say there are no negotiations. There's no basis for them, unless, of course, you want to talk to us about our terms that we're setting, which is you leave the region, you pay us reparations, and we get security guarantees from third parties. Other than that, there's not going to be any discussions. But if you want to talk about those, sure. So I guess in a strict legal, technical sense, there is still some room for negotiations. Problem is that the two sides seem to be moving further and further apart. And one of the reasons why that is because the Iranian side has already demonstrated to themselves that they can stand up to this alleged greatest military power on the history of the planet. And after about a month already, they're in a pretty stable situation, and they see the missile math that I keep talking about, talked about that in the previous show, that we're running low on all these things, and they see that they're not, because they have these underground bunkers that probably have hardly done anything. As a matter of fact, a lot of the news out in the United States here last few days was that certain elements within the U.S. military have acknowledged that, well, maybe we've only gotten about a third of the Iranians' missiles from what they've shot and what they may have left, and we haven't really gotten that much of it. So 10,000, maybe 12 or 13,000 by now, missile strikes has only netted you about one third of what they had. And so that means that their ability to sustain is likely going to continue on for the foreseeable future. And that gives them confidence. And with the Houthis joining, that gives them more confidence. Khatib Hezbollah, Hezbollah in Lebanon, all of this stuff gives them more and more confidence. And you saw that this morning with their the Iranian foreign minister, I'm sorry, the military spokesman, when he says, no, we're going to continue on until we get victory. We're not going to give in on anything. And there's one other thing that's interesting that you might not think that this is something, an indicator of a military victory. We showed you a couple of weeks back in kind of a mocking tone how the U.S., the administration, was mixing video game footage with actual footage on the war and trying to say how this is going to succeed. And this had, apparently, according to the White House, huge success because it got a lot of video, a lot of views. And somehow they equate views with strategic success. I don't know. Has nothing to do with the war. It doesn't show anything about it. It was just kind of an embarrassment to us. Well, it turns out that the Iranian side also has some version of using video stuff, but in a certain sense, I think you might can argue it's a little more effective. Gary, what do you got for us on that?
Yeah, Danny, I think President Trump finally has a real match here as far as, you know, being to self-promote, and the genius trolling that Iran is producing here with this Lego video. And this isn't the only one. This is just one of a few that they've made. But the details that you see in this, that's if anybody doesn't understand, that was J.D. Vance ripping up the ceasefire agreement that he proposed to Iran. And you go through this, and if you know what's going on, you'll see all the details that's been put in here. You see the school that was blown up. Then they even mentioned Epstein Island. Iran knows what they're doing, and they're paying close attention, not only to us, obviously, militarily, but even culturally. So they know how to jab Trump with a video like this. It's very sophisticated. It's well done.
And you know, look, a lot of those are, we see those actually falling where they have these warheads that have multiple sub-munitions that are coming right out and hitting lots of stuff. Where, I mean, those things that they're showing on there, Prince Sultan Air Base, that was attacked last night, and we had some losses there. So what do you think, if you could, let me ask you to compare the I think much less skilled, just even on an artistic level, versions that the White House was trying to do with what these is. How is that, do you think, being viewed by the global public?
I think, you know, anyone that knows, you know, putting like something like this together, what it entails, I think they both are, like I said, they have a level of sophistication that's you know, I don't know if it's cutting edge, but it's very well done, and people recognize that for what it is. And the thoughtfulness behind this, that the details that are involved, you know, they didn't just throw this together. They thought about it very carefully and put it all back. And you know, some of the sad images of, you know, of the coffins, you know, draped in the U.S. flag, and then they actually build a platform for Trump to stand on. What is it made out of? It's made out of coffins. So it's quite my wife actually teared up when she watched this. It was upsetting to her. They're good at what they do. They're good at what they do. So Trump has met his match as far as, you know, trying to bring forth the bluster and prove who they are by trolling in this case. So I think he's met his match as far as that goes too.
And I mean, just even on a practical level, the ones that were done by the White House were more like comic, bowling and games or something like that. And it obviously did splice in actual footage of things blowing up, et cetera. But when you see that those things blowing up really don't matter, and they haven't had any impact on the war, but the images and the specific details that are put in here, Prince Sultan Air Base getting hit, buildings and hotels getting hit in the Middle East. I mean, those are all real, and people know that they're real. And they know that our air defense is not stopping it. And some of the shots of an F-18 or one of the other fighters getting hit, that's actually happened as well, even in recent days. So it just seems to me, from the third parties who are watching both of these, this makes people go, yeah, because the Iranian side is more close to what's actually happening on the battlefield than the American side.
Yeah, they took more of a literal serious tone as they approach the project that they'd end up developing here. Whereas, you know, yeah, Trump almost, which was, it was upsetting because it was almost like he was trying to make a lighthearted situation out of it. Like scoring a strike on a bowling lane was as great as a strike on the military field. And it's like, wow, that's how you're comparing the two, where, you know, Iran took a much more direct and severe look, I think, at this situation rather than trying to make anything lighthearted about it all. To the contrary, they really portrayed the horror of it all, even though they were doing it with Legos, you know.
And listen, there's a lot of people out there. I've been seeing stuff on social media and some of these in the United States where they're saying, man, this is a David Goliath kind of thing. Trump talks about how they're the greatest military in the history of the world, like we just showed from last night. Oh. And people are going, yeah, this little David here.
He's got a loop in his head, Danny. Every 3 minutes, we have the greatest military in the world of history. You'll hear it come out. It's every 3 minutes, just about.
And then it's not manifested on the ground. So that's falling on deaf ears. And people are going, man, these guys stood up to the U.S. And they're getting some admiration. Far from what he said in that soundbite I showed a minute ago from last night, where I saved the Middle East and it's going to be free of all this. People are going, wait, what are you talking about? Because they're kind of the rising star here. And I think that does not bode well for our future.
Yeah, Dan, it reminds me of what we talked about earlier in the week, where he's really ensconced, Trump is, in a circle of people that have only gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. Who knows how few are in that group that are feeding him the information that he's making his decisions upon. We heard earlier in the week how when he sits down to watch a briefing, I think it's a daily video briefing of explosions. And that's what's feeding his head. And I think he's being fed all this, and he's not seeing the bigger picture at all.
And, you know, and I literally just as that last video was playing, I got a comment here from somebody who's in a position to know, and they say that Trump wants absolute control of the Straits and has been told by Hegseth and his people that it is achievable, that he can militarily force the thing open because of the people he surrounds himself with. And that is a disturbing thing, because that could imply that we could be not finished making our bad decisions. Something worse could be coming, and God help us if that's on the ground.
You know what, Danny, I don't know, do they think they're going to pull the rabbit out of the hat? Is that what's going on with that kind of approach? The people, are there sophisticated minds behind these thoughts? Are there sophisticated military minds behind an assessment like that?
I'm left to just muse at that. I have no earthly idea. Of course, I don't know who these people are. Listen,
I was going to say, when I hear you, when I hear Doug McGregor, when I hear a handful of other people that, you know, that we're familiar with that come on the channel, there's no one that's believing that. There is no rabbit to pull out.
Yeah. Easter is coming up, so maybe they're thinking there's going to be one. I don't know.
Well, Danny, I do have some good news. You know, if this YouTube thing doesn't work out for you, I think you've got something else down the line. I really do. You know, earlier on in the week, we had played a video of Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, and he had his usual, just animated presentation of what he has to say. But I'll tell you what, right behind it, you did such a beautiful impersonation. Now, I can hardly tell the difference between the two. You pulled this off, Danny. Look at this. Well, and that wasn't it. It's almost like, listen, I know you don't sit down and study this guy. You don't have to. You see him often enough. But then there was this. He went on. And this is something that you often see. He loves to do this, right? I think he's done it at least four different times, where he talks about shifting into, you know, a greater gear. And that, you know, we will do it. Well, Danny, you nailed that one too. So it's just, I love this. Look at this. So listen, think about it going forward. Again, if this YouTube channel doesn't, you know, take off, I think you've got an impersonation future for yourself here. So just keep in mind, maybe you might want to hire an agent. Because you really did it here.
Are you suggesting that I'm Secretary of Defense material?
No.
I'm just asking, you know, for a friend, but
I just thought you nailed it, brother. That's all. You've got a bright future ahead of you. Right. That's all.
I really appreciate you, and I really don't mean that, for bringing that up there. Thank you very much. But
anytime.
It is good to have a little bit of levity, because, man, there's not a lot to be laughing about these days.
Yeah, indeed.
Appreciate you, man. Indeed. Appreciate you guys too. And yes, we will be on top of this. If anything happens over the weekend, we'll look to our channel because we'll be on top of it. Otherwise, we look forward to seeing you Monday with a new list of great shows on the Daniel Davis
Indeed. Amen.